Alan Kring Productions in association with Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 3, delivered on August 27th.
Today, financial institutions. But as I always do in every class, we're going to begin with the screens from the markets today. And we'll start with the basic. Madam, good day or bad day on the street? Yes, bad day. Was it just a little bit or was it enough to be significant? What do you say? Well, it's enough. My marker is about a 0.33, yeah. And we're above that. And I mean, the Dow just got potty trained. Interestingly, the largest companies of the world were taking it on the chin pretty hard on a day like this today. And then the other ones are trailing behind, but the news is down. And the why of it, every day you're going to have the news services try to explain, well, this is why it happened today. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Sometimes the market's just an animal and it bites for no reason or jumps for joy for no reason. There is no question, however, that more and more analysts are saying we are getting close to the cliff and it's really got the market spooked. There's still going to be plenty of up days as well as some down days, but you have, though it's new, a Lehman-like disaster. Now, if you don't know what that means, one of the big houses on Wall Street was Lehman. And in 2008, it and several other houses were creamed, destroyed financially by the downturn, the crash. And there was belief that the government was going to step in and save these companies. They did some, they didn't others. Lehman was one that they just let die. And it was quite a shakeup for the market to realize that a giant like a Lehman Brothers could be creamed and go away and disappear from the earth. And now we've got this claim that we're going to have an analyst saying, we're about to hit another one of those kinds of disasters where the market goes down so much that houses fold because of their exposure, especially their exposures in the derivatives market. And we've got the same situation, even worse now. You would think that the government would have put in regulations. You would think that these companies, these investment companies, would get their act together and stop doing stupid things. They don't. They don't think like that. These companies don't. And the regulators, they do all kinds of mumbo jumbo that really just confuses everybody and doesn't address core flaws in our version of the capitalist system, in our capital markets. We're going to talk about capital markets today. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things. And I'm going to deepen your knowledge of how stock markets work and how you, sir, can become a millionaire, even with a shirt like that. Understand that you can be destroyed beyond your wildest dreams if you don't act prudently in this markets. However, you are all professionals, or you're soon going to be. You're going to have some money. You're going to make a lot of money. Maybe not you, but, you know, you'll still live a great life, just, you know, sort of on the road. You can join me on a biker tour, scare people. But the thing, though, is that I need to teach you some basic ideas and terminology. We begin to separate you from common people. The words we use carry a more precise meaning and sometimes a different meaning from what you have known before. And even with respect to finance and investments, and many of you will do investments, I need to broaden your knowledge of what investments are. Most people think that the two things you can do with stocks are buy and sell them. And the way you make money in a stock market is by buying stocks and then having the price go up. And as a matter of fact, people ask me, what's your best advice for the stock market right now? And I say, buy low, sell high. And they say, should I write that down? Yes. Well, obviously, duh. You're going to make money if the stock prices go up. However, that's only half of the market. The other half is you can make money with stock prices going down. You can bet either way on stocks, and it is a bet. Well, what I can just sell. Well, what if you don't have the stock? Then you can't sell the stock if you don't have it. You got to know a way that you can profit if a stock goes up, or if you have judgment that a stock is going to go down, you need a way to be able to play it that way. How could you profit off a stock going down? Okay, now for a little bit of terminology. God, I hate those flashing, twitching ads they put on. Just roast my cookie. Look, okay, first things first. When you buy a stock, we say you go long that stock. If you own a stock, you are long that stock. So a buy is go long. And if you own the stock, you are long. I'm long NFLX. I'm long TSLA. Why you would be long I don't know. So in other words, you are going to profit if this stock price goes up. If you are long the stock, you are betting that the stock price will go up. So you will eventually unload it at a higher price than you bought it for. That's called your capital gain. You also, if the stock pays a dividend, you'll get money from that too. So going long, you can make money from the capital gain, and if it pays a dividend, you'll get a nice little dividend check in the mail. This is a bet of a bull, okay? You remember what a bull is? What's a bull? Okay, I want you to get this really tight in your minds. A bull is an investor that sees stocks going up. I am bullish on NFLX. I believe I have determined that this stock is going to go up in price. A bear is pessimistic. I am bearish on the markets right now. In other words, I think the markets are going to go down. Or I'm bearish on TSLA because it's run by a man who is cray cray crazy. Okay, I'm bearish. So going long is a bull move. You are bullish on the stock. Now, let's get this, we'll make sure that we do this right. Sir, I want you to say, I am bullish on the stock. Now, I want you to say, I am bullish on this stock.
I am bullish on this stock.
Pretty good. Not very convincing, but better. You always want to put a little emphasis on that bull. I am bullish on this stock. I'm actually not joking. This is our lingo. Okay, however, I have determined, well, let me pull one up here. I think that Netflix is going to go down in price. So, how do I make money? I don't own Netflix. I'm not going to sell it because I don't own it. But what I can do is short sell it. And I can make money on a short sell. We short the stock. We short it. So you can go long or you can short. Here's how it works. I am bearish on Netflix. In my judgment, it is going to drop in price. So here's how I do it. I call my broker. Step one, short, one round lot, NFLX, cover, short one round lot, and we'll do this at market, cover at 285. That is the order, GTC. I'll do a GTC on this one. GTC means good till canceled. Now, be sure when you put in orders to buy or sell, you put limits. See how I did a limit there? You don't say, well, just do this. I could say, go long, one round lot, I don't know. Let me see what I can do here. 104.50 or better, good for one week or 5 days. This is called limit ordering. You're saying, here is where I want you to do it. I want you to buy 100 shares, one round lot, of Target. I want you to buy it. Do not buy it unless the price is 104.50 or lower or better. When you're buying, or better means or lower. When you're shorting, or better means or higher. Okay. Or selling, I should say. Now, good for 1 week means that you don't just leave this stupid thing hanging there. You kill it. If you can't complete the order within a week, make it go away. Good till cancel, you hold on until I cancel it. Or there are oftentimes limits where they'll cancel it anyway if it hangs too long. But if you don't do these things, you could say go long Target and not give any limits. And by the time they get to the floor, Target could skyrocket to 115, and you're stuck buying it because you didn't tell them not to do that. They'll do what you tell them to do. They won't think in front of you. They'll do just what you say. If you don't say something, that means that that variable is open for whatever happens in the market. So I'm limiting, this is a limit order on the long side. Just say, look, I want you to buy 100 shares, one round lot of Target, but don't do it unless you can get me a price of 104.50 or lower. Don't just buy it. Now, they might not be able to fill the order right away. See, Netflix is at, you'd actually be paying 104.76. So it's got to slide some for this order to be filled. Doesn't hurt to put it, you could just say at market. In other words, just buy it at whatever the price is. Maybe not the best idea if it's a highly volatile stock, but you can do it. But put in that limit. Get into the discipline of doing your limits. Now, let's go back to the short sell. I'm going to short sell one round lot of Netflix at the market. In other words, whatever the price is right now, let's get this started. And then I'm going to cover it at 285. And it's good till canceled. That can be dangerous. God, that can be dangerous when you're doing shorts, short sells, but one way or the other. Okay, here's the first thing that's going to happen. Step two. The broker is going to borrow 100 shares of NFLX I got to go back to the Netflix screen here. 291.03. Now, when I say borrow, that doesn't mean borrowing from somebody. There's just this cloud of stock out there. That broker, he or she, will just borrow 100 shares of it. Just, excuse me, I'm going to take this right now and borrow. And then the broker will sell those shares for you. Say the price is still there. So that means that into your account immediately goes 29,103. Just goes into your account. It's yours. Now, you can't go out and buy Chick-fil-A sandwiches for everybody. You keep that money. You don't get to play with that money. But it's in your account now. You borrowed stock and sold it. And you say, well, wait a minute, what's the catch here? Well, you're going to pay a little bit of interest. You're going to pay a commission and a fee for holding that stock that isn't yours. It's under your control right now, but it isn't yours. So you've sold it. Now, let's say in 5 days, NFLX drops to 285. That's the trigger. Your broker covers. That means that the broker then buys that Netflix stock. You sold it, he's got to buy it back. Broker buys 100 shares, NFLX, at 285. And then he gives that 100, that shares back to the wherever. And so you spend $28,500 because you bought them to give them back. And so your profit off the swing is $603. That's a short sell. We'll do a couple of these, and I'm thinking that, stupid as it might be, I might actually do one, a real one, and show you the screens as I pull it off. So you can see one actually happen. And I'll probably take an absolute butt bath on it, but, you know, you see, because if the stock price goes up, I am screwed, and that's S-C-A-R-E-W-E-D, if you want to write that in your notes. If that stock price goes up, you see, I'm going to cover and buy shares at a higher price than what I sold them at, and I'll take a negative. I'll take a real beating on this. So this is definitely, you want that stock price to go down, so you better be sure of yourself when you want to do this kind of trick. But this is a classic short sell. Now, here's the interesting part of this. We always see how many shares were bought this today, the volume, on balance volume. Well, actually, there are other screens you can look at, how many shares are in short position. That's called the short interest outstanding. How many shares are investors who are bears shorting on this stock on a given day? The more shares as a percent of the total shares outstanding, the more there is a negative sentiment on a stock. You can see a stock price going up. The bulls are pushing a stock price up. But at the same time, you can see short interest going up. The bears are setting their traps for the price to drop. So it always is a good idea. I'm going to go long the stock. Have a look at the short interest. Because the larger that is, like, for example, you can see, like some stocks, a short interest of 4%. In other words, 4% of all the stock of this company outstanding is in a short position right now. Whoop-de-doo, that's nothing. You see 12, 15, 30%, that means that there is a lot of negative sentiment on the stock out there. I pulled up one in for my investments class, and my jaw almost dropped. It had 70% of the float was in short, 70%. You see, that's a disaster, though, for a short seller. Because if I'm a short seller, my interest is in letting that stock just fall on its own. But if I have a bunch of other idiots who are in short positions and they start to panic, they're going to start covering their positions. And they're going to order their broker to buy and finish the deal. Buy it. And if they do it, too many of them at once, all that demand pressure to buy the stock is going to push the stock price right back up, and there you are with looking, oh, God, here come the... They panic. And matter of fact, there's an old trick. It's illegal, technically, called running the shorts out, where what we do is we wait for short interest to get very strong on a stock, and then we'll punch in a heavy buy order just to make the stock go up in price. Well, of course, these short, they saw the stock price going close to their cover point, and then all of a sudden the stock starts going up, and they just dirty their diapers. They all start saying, buy the stock, cover me. Of course, they make the stock price go through the roof. We're long the stock, and so what we do is once we've cleared them out and they've lost their dinner, we then sell it and collect the money. Because they drove the stock price up panicking. And so that's called running the shorts out. And it's illegal to do it. But like I said, you know, legal, illegal, you know, that's kind of relative. You know, ask Jeffrey Epstein. Too soon? Okay. Now, don't get cocky. If you're going to do all these things, start small. Get with one of these houses. I mean, a TD Ameritrade is like $6.95 a transaction. Fidelity, I think, is $4.95. They may have you put in some money to start off in case you do something like short positions, because you could literally lose more than you put in with a short. So they may say you got to put in some money if you want to do shorts, or if you want to write options, things like that. But in general, they're interested in bringing in new investors and small timers. The market doesn't give a rat's ass whether you win or lose. But they tend to try to make it so that you get as much information as you can and you're able to trade as easily as you can so that you can learn and start small. Don't put in your life savings. Or don't put in your party money for the weekend. Well, you might want to do that. But anyway, okay, that is short selling. Now you know how to go long, go short. Those are the two sides of that market. Of any stock market. And you can do this with stocks. You can also do it with ETFs. I'm not sure you can do it with mutual funds. I've never actually thought about that before. Huh. Isn't that interesting? But let me go on here a little bit. I want to ask a stupid question and see if I get an intelligent answer. Madam, what is a market?
A store where you buy and sell things.
Okay, store. A store. So if I wanted to buy stock, I'd go to the stock market, stock store.
Yeah.
And I should like, and put that in a bag, you know. 100 shares of Netflix and put it in a bag. Is that gluten-free? Okay, market, we use the term loosely, as everyone does. I'm going to the market. Or the markets are down today. Well, there's actually a technical way to consider a market that encompasses all of this. A market is a place where buyers is a place, physical or not, where buyers and sellers come together to execute transactions. A market is a place, physical or not, where buyers and sellers come together to execute transactions. Where buyers and sellers come together to execute transactions. So in other words, I can go to Walmart and there is a seller and I am a buyer, and at that place we can execute a transaction, transferring ownership from one to the other, from the seller to the buyer. Market. I can go to the OTC, the over-the-counter, NASDAQ, and I can buy or sell stock there from a seller or a buyer. That is a non-physical market. It meets our definition. Your dream, sir, is to own a mobile home. Not just any mobile home, a double wide on the outskirts of Decatur, where you will live with your new girlfriend, her 8 children, and her brother Bubba is moving in next door, and he runs this garage band, and he also does something that he has to wear a mask, but you don't know about that. And on the weekends, you do Elvis impersonations, and life is good because Elvis is still hot in Decatur. Good times. You need $60,000 because this is a double wide. And your girlfriend's brother is double wide. You got to get $60,000 together. You want to borrow it. Well, where are you going to borrow that? Well, there's this place called a bank, and you can go there. Now, what you're going to do, technically, you're going to sell that bank a piece of paper. That you're going to sell it for $60,000. And the bank is going to buy that from you for $60,000. You are the seller of the debt instrument. You're saying, well, wait a minute, fat boy, I'm borrowing the money. That's right. You are selling a debt security. You are otherwise known as the issuer of that debt security. You are otherwise known as the writer. W-R-I-T-E-R, writer. You're saying, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to write it, they're going to write. No, they're going to put it on paper in a formalized contractual fashion because you really, you know, you're not good at contracts. And, you know, it was good your last year of school, eighth grade was good. But they're still going to write, they're still going to produce it. But you're going to sign it first saying, I am the writer of this loan. And then they're going to buy it from you for $60,000. Now, that's a very weird way of thinking about borrowing. It's not how people think about it, but that's what's really happening. You are a security issuer. You are the seller of in a primary market, an originator of a debt instrument. And this bank is going to buy it from you. That is a market. That bank will probably, within hours, sell it to a secondary mortgage market. They'll bundle a bunch of loans that day, and they'll sell them to these massive multi-billion dollar global debt pools, like Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Sallie Mae, those kinds of things. But that there it is, another market. And you are actually a participant in that market. You are the seller in that market. Now, here's the thing. Madam, I should like to borrow $100 from you. You got $100 on you right now?
No.
Look, woman. what do you have?
I'm broke.
Don't tell me that. You really?
Yeah.
You don't even have enough for a burger?
Not on me.
Well, why not? Aren't you going out after the... Anyway. Okay. You got any money? Yes. You got any money?
Sure.
No, don't say sure. I don't trust that. Sir, you have any money on you?
No good.
What the hell? You know, really?
We're college students.
Oh, well, there's that, yes. Hence why you're safe from getting robbed by the Market Street gangs. Oh, no, they'll rob you anyway just to beat you up. Okay. Here. Irritates the hell out of me. No, 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 no. Wait, you're going to give that back, woman. Okay. You think for 1 minute that is Red Robin or Chick-fil-A, depending, you know. Okay. Now, madam, can you lend me $10? Excellent. Okay. The first thing necessary for this transaction to work is level. You had $10, I needed $10. So in other words, we would say you are a surplus economic unit and I am a deficit economic unit, okay? But in order for the match to work, we have to have similar levels. Her surplus has to match my deficit. Step one, matching. Step two. Okay. Tell me how that you want it back in a week.
I want it back in a week.
Well, you know, I was thinking maybe like when I die, you'd be in my will. You know, I wasn't going to pay it back in a week. Now, say knock it off, fat boy. I'm not giving you anything. Okay. Second one, timing. The timing of the surplus units need to get it back must match my timing as a deficit economic unit to pay it back. Timing has to work for both of us. Now, the last part. You're getting comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you have a choice. You see, that young person right there, she is from a very wealthy family in Chicago. She is of good breeding. She wears the right clothes. She watches the right series on Netflix. And she just is got her act together. She's going to have she has a great job. Okay. Now, she needs $10. Now, here I am. It's in the future when I am a homeless person on the streets of Chicago, and I see you walk by. You, I recognize you. I know who you are. You were my student back when I was a professor. Oh, my God. Let me stand up here and shake. Oh, wait a minute. My tube is coming out of my kidney. I'm leaking. You got $10 if you don't mind me. I'm good for it. Okay, do you understand? Which one are you more likely to lend to?
Sure.
Yes. Risk is the third pillar. Risk. Because both the lender might want to have low risk investments, but the deficit economic unit might be high risk, or vice versa. There are many, many investors who want high risk, and they don't want to lend or invest in low-risk enterprises. Okay, give me my money back. That's dinner. Now, back to the bank example. You were the seller of a paper, of a security paper, of a debt instrument. You were the issuer, you were the writer. The bank, as the lender, was the investor. The bank was the investor. The bank was the purchaser. This terminology seems a little odd. Well, I got a bill in the mail. No, actually, you issued the bill. A bill is a short-term debt, less than a year. You were the issuer. You actually, say the cable company is doing is sending you a memorandum reminding you of the bill you issued. They bought the bill, providing you the service, and now the bill is due. And you must satisfy the bill that you issue. Try this one. Okay, a bill is a very short-term obligation, less than a year. That's why you get a bill, you pay a bill. You issued a short-term obligation, you satisfy it in a short term. A note is an intermediate-term obligation. You have to pay it back with... It used to be 1 to 7 years. So a car loan would be a note. And a bond is a very long term, 20, 30 years. Here's a dollar bill. A dollar bill. But that's just a term we use now. Ma'am, can you read me at the very top of this what it says? Federal Reserve note. This is actually a debt instrument. The Federal Reserve issues these, and with the proceeds, it funds some of the deficit our government runs. How does the Federal Reserve pay for this note when it comes due in 7 years, 5 years, whatever? Do you know how the Federal Reserve pays for it? It prints more of them. I kid you not. That's how they pay. This is due in 5 to 7 years, something like that. And so when the Federal this wears out, all the Fed does is print some more of them just to keep the scam going. Not, I mean, didn't say scam. The economic activity going. Excuse me. Yeah, that's how it's done. This wouldn't it be great if you could pay your bills by just writing more bills? Yeah, ain't going to happen. Okay, so now, getting down to the bottom of this. Excuse me. Financial intermediation. Is the matching of surplus and deficit economic units. By level, timing, and risk. The matching of surplus and deficit economic units by level, timing, and risk. That is what financial services are all about. Again, financial intermediation is the matching of surplus and deficit economic units by level, timing, and risk. Now, a lot of books, and this one actually kind of does the same thing to a certain extent, they say financial intermediation is done by financial companies, banks, whatever, banks, mutual funds, trust funds, whatever. Nah, that doesn't necessarily have to be the way it is. You want to borrow $100 from me, but you're afraid to come to a professor to ask for $100. Like I'm kind of like, oh, but you know that he is my son. May God help us both. So, and he's your BFF, your bruh. And so you say, hey, could you hit him up for $100 for me? and you do it, that's a financial intermediation. No company, no bank or anything like that. It can happen that way. It's fine. But we always think in terms of financial intermediation being the domain of finance companies. It is to a huge extent, but there's still a surprising amount of financial intermediation that is highly informal, off the books, and all of that kind of stuff. So there you go. Now, in more formal terms, where the heck did I put my... Is it that hard for me to remember where I put... Where? You know what? I could have seen that. Whoa. I need to go to a home. Okay. Shut up. Okay. Let's talk in terms of a company. Now, remember what I had said before. Capital is long-term funds. Money is short-term funds. Capital is long-term funds. Money is short-term. Like, for example, in my company, Emergent Light Studio, I will start the year in early January. I will get a line of credit. And with that line of credit, see, I'm not making any money at that time of year. That's when I will build my inventory. I'll have some money in this bank loan to be able to keep a couple of part-timers employed once in a while. And I'll be able to pay my internet bills, and I'll be able to build my, whatever I'd sold, I'm going to have to replace it with new artworks and possibly some new equipment if there's something that I really need to have. And I'll have to pay my fees for the festivals up front. So I'm going to draw on that line of credit. And then as the show season in spring, summer, and fall proceeds, I can pay that money back and starts the cycle over again the next year. That is money. That is a money market that is happening in. Because the money is moved into my use for less than a year, and it comes back to the lender within that same year. So that's a money market. Now, if you were to lend a giant corporation $10 million for 30 years, that's a capital market, no doubt about it. You buy stock in a corporation, technically, that stock lives forever. Corporations don't have mortal life like humans do because they're separate from humans. The only way a corporation dies is if the stewards screw it over with bad management. Otherwise, it can just keep going forever and ever and ever. So that's kind of like the ultimate capital investment. So keep that in mind, money markets versus capital markets. For the most part, right off the bat, I will focus on the capital markets here, just for convenience. So now, your company needs money, sir. Okay. Now, one way that you can do that is by offering to sell a little bit of ownership in the company to some investors. So you go out there and you find a couple of angel investors, or maybe something a little less than angelic investors, and they take a position in your company. They take a position in your company. Say 10% ownership, claim to 10% of the residual cash flow, in other words, from the business. To the investors. Okay. The business gets capital. The investors get ownership. This would be a direct investment. Direct. And I set these up. Now, that stock that they get, they can't be selling it. It's restricted unless I go public and register that stock later, which a lot of times happens. But right off the bat, they're stuck once they do that. That's why you're going to have to really show to angel investors or to any kind of private equity investors that this private placement is a good idea. And that's what we call a private placement. It's a direct. Now, there might be intermediaries, introducers, like what I was. I was a rainmaker. Well, I wasn't the rainmaker, technically. I was just there to look serious. But this is classic stuff of private placements. Happen all the time. As a matter of fact, here at ISU, we have classes where students design in a group will put together a company, real deal. They'll get all the plans together and financial projections. And if it looks like it's going to, if it looks top notch, they've done a real pro job, and they're dead serious about what they're doing, we could bring them before angel investors, introduce, make a formal meeting, what we call a come to Jesus meeting, where the money and the idea people get together and they see if they can work out some kind of a deal. We've had a few spectacular successes doing this, a few. And we've had a few disasters too. There was one point where we weren't paying attention exactly, and this one group, they had a great idea, and they went through some PowerPoints and they showed some other stuff, and one of the angels said, well, this looks good. I'd like to see the business plan. And the head hotshot of the group of students said, well, nobody does business plans anymore. Dear mother of God, you stupid hoe handle. Anyway, end of meeting, short investment inquiry. Yeah, they're going to want a lot. Financials, they're going to want to check your backgrounds, make sure that you're as clean as snow and all that. But there you go. Now, there are indirect investments. Now, indirect investments go through the financial intermediation process, full blown. One would be where the one that I, of course, use, and that is very, very common, is for the business to go through a bank . Now the bank doesn't have any money of its own. It has depositors' monies, which are liabilities to the bank. So the bank is acting as the intermediary between its investors, depositors, and businesses. So this would be a version of indirect investment involving loans, debt instruments. The one above could be equity investors, stock investors. But the bank is probably going to be primarily in the realm of lending. But again, the bank doesn't have any money of its own. It goes through, it gets deposits from depositors, and then the bank simply takes that depositor's money and buys debt paper from a business. When I go to that bank and say, I'm going to need $25,000 for this year to get my show running, they're going to say, okay, $25,000. They're going to say an interest rate on it, and other terms and conditions and all this. And then they tap their depositors. They go to the depositors' bank accounts, checking accounts, savings accounts, CDs, all that, and they simply take some of that money and they lend it to me. So I issue the paper to the bank, and the bank uses the depositors' money to invest, buy that paper. Notice how the terminology gets almost a little fuzzy. It's kind of like following it back and forth. You get used to it after a while. Hell, it took me only about 30 years. Okay, now there's one other way. Another way I'll bring up right now, it's through investment banks. Instead of a normal bank, an investment bank actually buys stock and bond offerings by corporations. It buys. Facebook went public. Facebook didn't sell that stock to you and me. Facebook sold that stock to an investment bank syndicate. They had worked out all the parts of the deal, and then what they did was Facebook issued the stock to the investment bank, and the investment bank issued them the money. Minus fees and all of that. The investment bank syndicate. And I say syndicate because there would be a lead big investment bank, and then it would share the burden of the stock with a group of other investment banks. And that's called the syndicate. Now, where did the investment bank get its money? From its clients. Clients push money into the investment bank as investments in that bank. And then, when they have finished, they will move that money to their clients. They will move that stock, I should say, to their clients. Powerful, rich families, corporations, investment structures that I couldn't even explain to you because some of them I don't even understand. And then we pump the stock up, hype it, go to the idiots in the news media, Facebook went public. And then we drive the stock price up, and then we sell it out here on behalf of the clients in the secondary market. In other words, you get it, and then we let the price fall back to where it should have been. But hell, you invested in Facebook. No, actually, you really didn't. You were just a sucker at the end of the chain that we unloaded the stock on. But that's how that works. So again, clients of the investment bank. And these are people that you would never meet, or if you did, probably you wouldn't know what to do, except to stand there. These people put money into these investment banks and say, do it. And then the investment banks make the negotiations for stock or bond offerings by companies going public or doing second offerings or what are called seasoned offerings. And then when the money, they get the money to Facebook or to whatever company is going public. And then that stock is allocated to the members of the syndicate, which then provide it to the clients. We then drive the price up. And then once the price is up, we can sell it out of those clients' accounts so they make a lot, nice little pinch of money, and it's sold out there to you people. Again, in that round right there at the end, Facebook no longer exists. The investment banks really no longer exist. That is a secondary market transaction. It's just investors to investors. A primary is what happened when Facebook issued the stock to the investment banking syndicate. That was a primary market transaction. You will never in your lives be an investor at the primary level. Just won't. Maybe one or two of you will. If you are, you'll really irritate me. You've made that much money in your lives. But just keep that in mind, that you will, we, all of us, will always be just secondary investors. Facebook wouldn't know us from Adam's left ox. We don't exist because it was not involved. It does not get any money from the transactions with us, and it doesn't really even worry about our names. That's all done by a stock transfer company. Those are the three large areas. But what about this thing? You're in there somewhere. You're going to buy and sell stocks in your lives, or someone is on your behalf. So how do you do that? Well, the first thing, and it's absolutely important that you know this. If you buy a single stock, or even just a couple of stocks, you're an idiot. You deserve what's going to happen to you. We love people like you in my world. Your life savings is an extra couple of ounces of steak at Morton's in Chicago. Your family, your kids' tuition for college. When we take that from you because you're stupid, that is hell. That's a couple of extra martinis in Manhattan. And I'm not even joking about this. We love your money, and we'll be more than happy to. Look at this thing right here. Where is this one? There it is. Oh, we just love to have the news media tell these stories. How he made $2.8 million trading on his lunch break. Oh, we want to make sure that happens. But the 10,000 who lost their life savings playing that stupid game, we don't tell their story. Long ago, when I worked as a carny, set up the whole shop, and we'd have the little balloons. I had the little balloon thing and the darts, and we'd wait for some cute little munchkin girl or boy to come up and give the dollar, and we'd help. I'd lift his hand up, and I'd make sure, boom, pop. Oh, you got it. Unbelievable. Pop. Oh, wow. You're incredible. Pop. Make sure he got all of them, and then we'd give him the biggest stuffed animal there. You carry this around. Make sure you tell everyone where you won this on this easy game. He was the only kid who got a big, who won that day. You understand? Don't be the victims, the marks, as we used to call you. Don't be the marks for the carnival of the stock market. Play the game right, and you can make a lot of money. But that means diversifying your portfolio, buying enough stocks so that they are canceling out each other's weird risk. And all that is remaining in your portfolio is this global risk that company faces. Because the markets are not going to reward you for taking on that peculiar, independent, company-specific risk. We're not going to pay you to take on the risk of Elon Musk, a narcissistic personality disorder pothead. But you put it into a portfolio, yeah, that risk, you could expect a reward. But it's just an expectation. You could also get killed. But at the same time, taking on peculiar risk is ridiculous. How do you do that? Well, one way you could do it, rule is about 30 stocks in a portfolio. That's diversification. That's pretty good. 30 stocks. The problem is, there are a couple of problems. One is, you really should be buying around lots of stock. In other words, 100 shares. Plus, you're going to pay a commission for every purchase. Then you're going to have to watch it to make your portfolio to make sure it stays balanced, all that. Well, let's look at that. Let's take one stock in a portfolio. Maybe Ford in the portfolio. That's a good stock. $8.76, well, you'd pay about $8.78. So that's $878. That's for one of the 30. Okay, we got to get 29 more. Let's get some Target in there. Loves me some Target. So a round lot of that's going to cost you $10,470. Okay, now we got two. Let's keep going. Walmart, another $11,200, and now you're at three. You see how quickly this is going to stack up to more money than you've got? I can't stand it. I got to show you. Any of you ever heard of a company called Berkshire Hathaway? It's a good investment. Who's the head of Berkshire Hathaway? Do you know? Buffett. Okay, Berkshire Hathaway. Now, there are two classes of Berkshire Hathaway. One class, and this is not that unusual, this class has super voting rights. So class B, one vote for each director position at each annual shareholder meeting. Class A is the insiders. They get super votes. I don't know for sure. I think it's 10 votes per director. Well, let's look. You want to play in the big leagues. Yeah, I want to meet Warren. You would if you own Class A. That's per share. Do you see the price? There's the price per share of Berkshire Hathaway A. So are you ready to buy a round lot of that one? $298,420 per share. A round lot would cost you $29 million. Is that right? What? $29 million? That's more money than I got in the backseat of my car. Well, you could do a baby Berk. That's okay. You probably won't get to meet Warren. Well, I've never met him. I don't know why not. He needs to talk to me. But that's a baby Berk. So at least you can say you invest in Berkshire Hathaway. Okay, so that's another way that you can do it. There are two other ways that are not going to kill you, where you get instant portfolio diversification. Each one has an upside, each one has a downside. One is ETFs, and the other is mutual funds. An ETF is just a stock. You can buy it, sell it 24/7. You pay a commission just like you do any stock, except that an ETF is actually a mirror image of something massive, like the Standard & Poor's 500. You could invest in the Standard & Poor's 500 by buying what's called the SPDR. Here's the SPDR. It's a stock, technically. Well, practically. No, I want to do SPY. The SPDR. That is the Standard & Poor's 500. You would have instant portfolio diversification by owning this. And professionals would manage it, balance it, rebalance it, feed it at night, change its diaper, the whole nine yards. The other way you can do it is through mutual funds. Now, ETFs, there is one for everybody, anyone. You got ETFs of all the major indices. You got ETFs that are global, ETFs that are medical, technology, high yield, high dividend yield, green, you name it, you can have it. The same is true with mutual funds. They basically are the same idea. A company brings together piles of different stocks of different risk levels, leanings toward this or that, and the nice thing about mutual funds is when you trade them, swap them one for another, you don't pay a commission. But you're allowed to do that only 4 times a year in a window. So you can't just get rid of it or buy into it when you want. So that's the downside. The upside is you don't have, especially if you get a no load, they don't charge you a fee to join. Some of them ask you to put in a certain amount of money, but mutual funds that are no load, you just get in there and you form your portfolio. You have to have money to do it, obviously. But you can do it only 4 times a year. You can move from one to the other. ETFs, you can call in the middle of the night. You ate a really raunchy pizza from Earl's Pizza Heaven. You can call your broker. I want to buy Papa John's. You can do it, but you'll pay a commission every time you do it. And there's a temptation to just start playing. And you eat up anything you make in capital gains just by jumping in and out and feeling really cool doing it. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.